Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
I'm HRN's Communications Director Kat Johnson with a preview of this week's episode of Meat and Three, our weekly food news roundup. We decided it's high time we do an episode about Mary Jane.
Marijuana, things are happening.
That's right. This episode is about pot. We're exploring the rhetoric surrounding legalization in New York's recent gubernatorial primaries. And a cheesemonger turned cannabis consultant shares the tricks of the trade.
Great. So do you want to conquer the world? Do you want to have hazy eyes? Do you want to, you know, just relax all day and be floaty?
And we find out how one exemplary South Carolina farmer is trying his hand at a new crop.
Every plant that comes up from seed is different. And so it's learning how the plant grows, how it responds, and then familiarizing myself and my senses with this plant.
Plus, Hannah Forden and I taste test the hottest new cocktail ingredient, CBD. So subscribe to Meat and Three wherever you listen to podcasts and be the first to know when the newest episode of Meat and Three drops.
If you heard the noise they make, but let me introduce my new Rocket 88.
Yes, all right. It's October 4th, 10:02 p.m., and you just tuned in to the Main Course OG. What's up, everybody? It is very exciting. Now, we just heard the first rock and roll song ever recorded. It was called Rocket 88, and it's a coincidence because this show, I'm going to start this show differently than the other shows. This show was the first show ever recorded on the Heritage Radio Network. So it's very, very exciting. We are actually in studio with one of the founders of the radio station. She came up with the idea while we were here, you know, at Roberta's having dinner one night. And look at all this stuff that's come from it. So
full circle.
We are in
this
studio.
This was pre-CBD oil.
Pre-CBD. This is where people were actually rolling joints at Roberta's, like old school. So in studio, we have our point guard, Emily Pearson.
Morning.
Hello, Emily. We have Mike Edison, host of Arts and Seizures.
Good morning.
We have the owner of Roberta's and pizza maker extraordinaire.
And what basketball position am I?
Dennis Rodman.
Ah.
And me, I'm your host, Patrick Martins, too. Our guests for the weekly grill are Sarah Obritis and Hugues Dufour.
Ah, good morning.
Hello, hello, hello.
Am I saying that right?
Almost.
Hugues Dufour.
Yeah, it's sexy.
C'est mieux?
His family still corrects me.
Oh, my God.
It's the sound U, you know? It's
Hugues.
So what is the proper way to say your name?
Hugues.
Ugh. Ugh.
A guy called me Ugh. Dirt once. It's like, okay.
Oh, that's a lot of nukes, barts, but dirt.
So we have Emwell. They are the chefs and owners of Emwell Steakhouse and Emwell's Dinette, which is a PS1. So we are engineered by Amanda, and Amanda's been behind the booth for decades even. So, hey, Amanda, how's it going back
behind
there?
Behind our booth, right?
I wish I was here for years.
Oh, you will be. I can tell you have a lot of potential. So without further ado, I'll throw it to Emily. Take us through the show.
All right. Good morning. We are, well, my mic hates me today, but that's okay. We are going to...
Wait, Mike hates you or your mic hates you?
Both.
M-I-C?
No.
He's wearing a Michigan shirt and I said go blue and he said the M is for Mike.
I said go blue too.
And I say I'm brought to you today by the letter M.
Nice.
Mr. Edison. I got it.
Thank you. Merci.
All right. We're going to jump right in, but this first segment is the weekly base. We're going to talk about Go-tober, kosher bacon, if there is such a thing, and Canada, of course. I'm also sweating, guys. What did you just mean about the air? Just so everyone knows. Okay. Tuesday was International Coffee Day. Is coffee the most important drink in your life? Would you give up coffee or alcohol or something else if you had to?
Can I keep my mouth?
If you had to. I mean, we could clearly say no. If you had to choose between one,
coffee or alcohol.
Coffee, gone in a heartbeat. Alcohol
really?
Stays.
Yeah, as long as I can keep my cocaine and my amphetamines.
Mornings would be so tough. Well, yeah, if you could do CBD oils and smoke pot.
Do all that with alcohol.
That's kind of the opposite direction you need to go. I'm with Mike here. As long as I can keep my my pouch, my satchel of speed, I think we're pretty good.
Yeah. Also, my LSD and my edible finger paints. I don't like these choices. I mean, why are you conflating alcohol and coffee? They're two different things.
I don't think we were looking for qualifiers. Yeah.
We're celebrating International Coffee Day, dude.
And another thing, I'm sick of International This, That, The Other Thing Day. When do we get to National Pasta Day?
It's National Pasta Month.
Well, I wanted to make it National Pasta Millennia.
Can we? What's the real question here? Is when do we get to Universal like Pasta Day or Universal Pizza Day? I want to know that not just the our world we live in, but that the whole galaxy is involved in this.
You're very macro.
That's
called goat, right, guys?
Also, isn't everyday pizza all time.
So wait, I want to ask: do you guys have coffee-based cocktails at your restaurants?
Only for myself.
Only for yourself.
Yeah.
We have coffee on our oysters. We've done that.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because we had the two. We were probably messed up.
Yeah, that was a more. Yeah.
We made a sabayon out of coffee. It dropped it on an oyster and it worked.
But it's funny. Why are there not more coffee drinks? There's the Irish coffee. There's the Cafe Corretto, which Mike.
Big on spiking my coffee. I mean, a little jolt is good, like the Carajillo that you would get in Spain, which is, you know, a masterpiece of, like, blood-confusing magic, you know, sugar, booze, and caffeine, or the Tres Fasico, which is also spiked coffee up further north in Spain. I mean, I've been spiking my coffee for years, just...
But yet there's no coffee drinks. Almost no coffee drinks exist.
It's funny. It's a good segue to the Canada part.
Okay, we'll go there then.
Up north, like, there's a lot of, like, spiking your coffee and coffee in steakhouses. I mean, like, Café Flambé and stuff. It's everywhere. Like,
is it just because it's so cold?
I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. It's maybe the Irish fact mixed with stuff. I don't know.
I love it. I make what I call hobo coffee, where I go to the deli and buy the 75-cent black coffee, and I go next door to the liquor store and buy a little bottle of Bailey's Irish Cream, and I'll mix it right on the street like a homeless person.
That's a great kit.
You know?
Yeah. Smart. Yeah.
The other thing you have in common with a homeless person is I don't think you have a house, do you? Also, you've been wearing the same clothes for decades.
Yeah, but my coffee is awesome.
So that is interesting. So what other things exist in Canada that don't exist here? Our question was, I mean, Emily was going to say bagels. I'm told we have some Canadians in the house. So, of course, we have to ask Montreal versus New York. What other products or ingredients are famous in Canada?
We're really going to relitigate this.
What do you miss? What can you not find here? Like your bagels?
Our bagels, like, I used to eat them very equally. Like New York and Montreal, I don't care. I don't care enough about bagel. But if I think about that a little further, I think Montreal bagels are a little better.
Because they're more crusty?
They're denser, and they boil them in honey solution kind of thing. It's a different process.
So it's not about the water.
I'll take them both once a year.
Yeah, I mean, it's
What's this anti-bagel thing? What's going on here?
The bagels are delicious.
They are. But
yeah, they're good. I like the toppings better here, though.
You guys see how fit both of these bagel. People are, right? They're Mike both very fit. It's probably their lack of bagels. You look at the three of us over here. We're like, look like
we
bagels.
We have bagels.
Yeah. We like literally look like three bagels with cream cheese.
It is low-hanging fruit when it comes to Canadian anything. And it's more of a regional thing because you can tell from his accent. He's, you know,
Montreal, not Toronto, yeah.
Interestingly enough, there must be something going on at the border because you can't get a lot of products, food products from Quebec or even
what,
Canada.
They stop
condiments,
you?
Fresh bagels, you got it. But in terms of your favorite, you know, poutine mix or
it's a vengeance for
ketchup.
Not getting you dairies, I think.
I see. So we're angry. So we block you from coming in. Do you block Americans from bringing stuff to Canada? No, it's tougher the other way?
No, besides, like, Heinz ketchup, I don't think we care about it much.
What
mayo chup.
What about if you were to smuggle something back from Canada, what would be in your suitcase?
Seal meat.
Seal meat? Really?
Freshly beaten.
They were getting freshly beaten.
No, but what do you miss? No. Is it real seal meat, moose meat? I mean, what doesn't
Club
exist
sandwiches,
here?
Not seals.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I don't know if I want to get into that, but yeah, seal meat once, like, in season. That's something enjoyable. Yeah.
That was a good one. Club
on
sandwiches, not
over.
Seals. That's good. That was good. I caught that. Well, anyway, so that's interesting. I always thought that there were a lot of things like foie gras. Is foie gras even legal to make here? No, right? So
I think it's the lifestyle we miss, not the little products. You know, it's a cultural. There's something very spiritually awesome and entertaining and love.
Just go ahead and say it. You guys are more sophisticated than us. It's fine. Yeah, culturally,
Sarah, you're
like a cultural devil's triangle, and we're just you know missionary.
I don't know. I think we just have more time, you know, to enjoy stuff. That's all.
Well, you stay up later. I mean, you go hunting. Yeah, you have nature. What is it?
Hunting.
There is that proximity to the nature. That's for sure. But you know.
You hunt?
I do.
Where do you hunt?
I like birds. I like hunting birds mostly. I'm not a fan of like deer and moose and stuff like that, but I like woodcocks.
How about the Canadian beaver?
Canadian beaver? I trapped a little bit.
Oh, really? Wow. Well, that's what the French did here first. They were always the trappers. They were the ones the furthest west. They were doing all this cool stuff.
That's what our daughter was last year for Halloween.
A trapper?
She was a trapper. We covered her in all of our pelts. That's what we missed, a good rabbit pelt. Can't find it. On an stateside born rabbit. I was trying to think of a synonym for rabbit. There is none.
Lapin. Wow. So,
Mike's very interesting. So. Mike, you were about.
He was about to say something.
You guys want to hear the depth of my French?
Yes.
Voila. Right?
Yeah. That's pretty good. Pretty good.
Voila. With the W, right?
Voila. Just to clarify, Sarah, are you also Canadian or you're just married in?
Yeah, I'm married in Queens, okay. Quebec.
Queens. This is like the same thing. Queens.
Cut.
Queens is the Canada of Brooklyn.
Yeah. I really missed
New York when it was a part of Canada.
Oh, really? Were you on this once? Oh, brother.
You guys still have the Queen of England on your money.
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, you don't feel like that's embarrassing?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
It is. But it's funny because, like, you know, moving down here became the two things I hate the most, you know? I became French-Canadian. I became French and Canadian. Like, it's crazy.
Yeah, both.
You know. Anyway,
full circle is that I was born and raised in Queens, a part of Queens, the most diverse neighborhood in the world, I believe, still. And so I bet you I have some Quebecois neighbors and Canadian neighbors.
There you got everyone over there.
Growing up.
So Long Island City, right? That's where both your restaurants are. Yeah. In Long Island City proper. Do you call it Queens or Long Island City?
It's the gateway to Queens. So you just say it all.
Well, we're going to talk more about that in the next thing. Well, okay, take us to the pasta month. Let's transition to Italy.
I mean, we just have to keep up with all of our national and international months here. Ooh, la, la. October is... What'd you get?
Club a sandwich.
So October is National Pasta Month, as deemed by the NPA, the National Pasta Association. They are the leading trade association for the U.S. pasta industry, and they encourage the consumption of pasta by being the center of knowledge and promoting sound public policy to the consumer, the industry, and the regulatory bodies, because a sustainable pasta industry is vital to healthy diets.
Who knew that existed? Hallmark came out with Happy Pasta Face Day cards. Did you see?
No.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
no.
So that's sort of...
my
okay, no, but that's
so
sort
what
of
would you
my
do?
Question. If you were the president of the NPA, what would you do first? Clearly, you called Hallmark. You made sure there were cards.
Oh, yeah. You would, like, blow this up, starting with a partnership with greeting cards. I mean, they started it, right? Didn't they make Mother's Day and...
Who is this?
Basically, Hallmark.
Oh, Hallmark. Yeah, they made all these crummy holidays.
They made Valentine's Day, right?
I mean, but some of their cards are nice.
So wait, Mike, with your M on your
shirt. I feel bad for Hallmark.
I would want pasta that I could buy it in a certain letter shape.
I was thinking
you're
going to
play with the shapes.
I love alphabet soup because I like the possibility of random combinations of letters. Because, you know, if you had 1,000 monkeys drinking 1,000 bowls of alphabet soup for 1,000 years, eventually you'd get Shakespeare floating on top of your soup.
Eventually. Wow. One person.
We had alphabet pasta at the restaurant doing one.
Risotto with it. Yeah,
that's an awesome idea.
Is it handmade? No, you bought it.
No, we make them. Right?
Oh, only in the letters S and H.
I do a lot of insomnia. Shaped pasta.
Like I need more L's.
If I could come in
more
for
M's.
An E-shaped pasta, that would be fantastic.
Lowercase L would be the most annoying, right? Is it
just
a one?
Straight. Yeah,
is
you can't tell.
Broken.
So, yeah, no, but pasta is the secret to Americans' obesity epidemic. I think they should give free pasta at every arena.
Wait, is that an opinion or you're pulling out a fact?
No, that's exactly what the NBA wants to hear.
That is definitely an opinion. Bagels. I think it's
bagels. Bagels. No, I think pasta might not be the healthiest food, but because you only use an ounce of meat, the whole portion costs $2. It takes 10 minutes to make. If Americans ate more pasta, more olive oil, I think they'd be a lot healthier. Well, the problem is like hamburgers and steaks and all this stuff that Americans eat.
Is also the like word you have to be careful with. It's less quantity, but maybe it's more often, but it's more the Italian approach. It could be in every
meal.
Eat
all the pasta you want all the time.
I lived in Rome when I was in college, and I thought that it was normal for two people to share one box of pasta, but that's really meant for 4 to 5.
Yeah,
small boxes.
Yeah.
No, pasta I came back about 15 pounds heavier.
Pasta's have you guys ever seen Patrick wrong. Eat pasta? The bowl is like, you know, it's...
But
it's,
they do package like pasta wrong. Because it is the box is not for two people. That's how most people eat. The box is for like three people. It's all.
It's for four to five. It's not your
who
only.
Who eats for five people pasta most times?
You know
times.
How they do the coop over like, Antoinette's breast? We could do a possible about over his belly. We could be like, that's the size possible you need.
Just don't get in the bagel hole. Then you'll lose it. It'll fall
he really enjoys pasta, though, just out of the wheel of cheese.
Parmigiano.
Just like, just dig the wheel of cheese out and just dump the, that's really.
That is an actual style.
Cacio e pepe. That's
but I do think pasta is the healthiest food in the world if people ate it and it costs $2. And you only eat an ounce of meat. What Americans are doing right now is eating like huge amounts of pizza, huge amounts of hamburgers. And yeah, pasta is a healthy food. And it's not sold at a single arena. You cannot get a bowl of pasta. Have you been to a pasta flyer, Mark Ladner's place?
I haven't.
He makes pasta in under 15 seconds, basically. It's delicious. It travels well. And I also don't ever really see frozen pasta so much. I see Stouffer's, like these lasagna type things.
But that sounds crazy. Why do you make pizza frozen? But why would you need a frozen pasta? Why?
You don't need it, but I just say.
But
it
I can tell
exist.
You why you would need a frozen pizza because most people aren't going to make dough, wait for it to do all of what it needs to do over those 2 days or 3 days, and then flap it out, top it, and bake it.
Like no,
so all those steps are taken out. A frozen pasta, what are you doing? Unfreezing it like, and still putting it in a thing of boiling water?
There are a few things like raviolis and gnocchis.
Yes, like, that's
I think
for
it's
sure.
a little bit the same attitude as pizza, right?
And now the tragedy is though that there's an entire group of consumers that you skip over them because they're deathly allergic to pasta.
Oh,
like we've done, pasta's done a number on their systems or us as humans, right? And so now they're out. So I understand your aspirations to get more pasta out there, but...
Well, it is National Pasta Month. But I will say this. The Italians have done a terrible job of selling their cultural things. Like we were talking last week, coffee. Starbucks owns the coffee in America. It should have been like Lavazza or Italy. You know, they should have... They don't have one... place anywhere.
All that coffee comes from Brazil. It's a very
It's all a weird thing. Well, all the pasta comes from Italy. It's American wheat sent to Italy and then brought back. So anyway, it's just all interesting. There's no domestic pasta other than our friend Renato Sardo's bio pasta. Just pasta should be more out there in all of the various.
In the early years, Heritage had a lunch account at Nicola's, and he had a pasta
closed.
Poster.
It closed. The brothers.
No shit, sure. I'm sure.
Those two guys working next to each other.
anyway, remember the pasta poster? It was gorgeous. They had 70 different shapes, and the word, I learned stuff.
Not enough
waiting
ease.
Online.
No, it is one of those things. I think it's also like regional and cultural. Like, is there a name for a pasta that you call it maybe in the north of Italy? Which one?
Plink.
Plink.
There is not one arena that sells a bowl of pasta. And I can't believe
that. Is that what you want to eat while you watch
a Yankee
game?
Someone show the bowl of spaghetti on me at the Yankee game.
Better than that pretzel.
We make a spaghetti sandwich.
Do you?
We've been making that forever.
Let's bring that.
With on what bread?
How hungover were you when you invented that?
On the little sesame bun.
Oh, yeah?
It's like a spaghetti frittata.
That's awesome.
Right? It's like a frittata. You bake it?
Yeah, spaghetti. You crack an egg in it. Cook it in small pans. We make a patty with it. And like... top it with like overdressed Caesar salad.
That's cool. Hypercaloric.
That would be good in the arena.
That does sound like it's 1,000 calories right there.
I'm sure you will not go to the new Shea Stadium, whatever it's called, anytime soon. But behind center field, there's a little nook. There's a red pasta sauce place. And I think they sell a good vino, a semi-good vino. And they can't not have pasta, so I'll get
back to
you on
that. That's interesting. If that exists, a restaurant, that'd be cool. All right, well, take us to the next story. Where are you going next?
We're going to Kosher Bacon Land.
Oh, good. Something everyone can talk about.
You know, in this room, I think so. So the New York Times, this is the Cliff's Notes. I suggest you read the whole article. But the New York Times reported this week that meat labs are pursuing a once impossible goal, which is kosher bacon. A company called Mission Barns, the startup in Berkeley, is focused on creating animal fat, or something that mimics animal fat, where much of the distinctive flavor of meat resides. It recently mixed the fat with other ingredients to create duck sausages that it served to investors and employees. Creating more structured meat products like a breast or a steak is expected to take much longer. Environmentalists and animal activists are proponents of the technology because it could produce the flavor of hamburgers and sausages without the greenhouse gases and animal suffering, supposedly. Oh, yes, of the factory farming system. There is quite a bit of controversy, but Eitan Fisher, the chief executive of Mission Barns, said he was hopeful that through some creative chemistry, his company could even grow pork that would eventually be able to get a kosher designation.
Why? It's crazy how that we cannot, like, we cannot change our habits at all, and we have to, you know, we have to take drastic solution like this instead of adding
less bacon. Yeah,
you know, let's make bacon out of wood.
Yeah, right.
You know, because instead of like diversifying.
Yeah,
like,
it's funny you say that because I've been working on a French fry recipe made out of wood. That it's not quite there. I don't know how much more time I need, but definitely I feel like people are sick of killing all these potatoes, and eventually trees are going to be a more likely and sustainable source of French fries.
No. It makes sense.
But in all seriousness, let's bash up the sacred. I mean, what is it? What is the kosher? Why? I'd rather not see us manipulate animals and their fats in labs, but I say anything that's intangible and passed down through ridiculous edicts and stuff, we can mess with.
I mean, it's crazy, right, Mike? You don't call it bacon, right?
Well, you know, I hate like turkey bacon and faux bacon and tofurkey. You know, I don't understand like this vegan envy that people who don't eat meat want to create meat out of other things, like, you know, like trees. It makes no sense. You know, I mean, I don't want to condemn the few Jewish friends I have left by telling them what to eat and what not to eat. You know, God bless us all and all that. But I mean, if you're going to cherry pick from the Bible what you can and cannot eat, I mean, we should also be stoned to death for like mixing hemp and wool and cotton, and you know, we should all have concubines and slaves as well.
Wasn't it the whole point though, not to not to eat pork?
Well, that's the point. It's basically creating something that
it's not that it kills you, but it's the idea of it, right?
Yeah, so and so why would you trick
back
it?
The idea of it?
Yeah, no, exactly. It's not the spirit of it.
I think you should just let it go.
Something seems worse than this. This like seems like a bad sci-fi movie where like the grown science pork that we grew and then now you start eating it, and then all of a sudden everyone starts turning into pigs or something, and then pig zombies. Exactly. I don't know.
But you can see that happening too, right? In a chef point of view, like engineering, like the perfect steaks with the perfect marblings and like all, you know, like it's going to come to that. I mean, I'm pretty sure it's going to come to that. It's pretty sad, but
it's called a cow.
I believe we're in a, you know, we make organs now. So like, yeah.
Yeah, they're going to grow a pig that doesn't. Well, basically, the only reason the pig is prohibited, according to the Jews, the Bible, or whatever, the Talmud, they do not chew their own cud.
That would be Leviticus.
I don't even know what cud is. And then they must have a cloven hoof, and pigs do not have a cloven hoof. So they're prohibited. So as you were saying, like you could make them have a cloven hoof and chew their own cud, and then you're like, now we can eat bacon, but that's not what it's about.
This is some kind of loophole, you know? It's kind of like making your two-year-old son president of your company so he can be a millionaire without, you know, having to pay the taxes on it.
right.
And also the techniques of redoing the bacon, it just means that bacon has a phenomenally successful marketing success story in one word. Because again, like, let's just not even bother calling it bacon the way it sounds.
They're really ruining this for me because both of my daughters are kosher. They don't eat bacon, which leaves me the whole slab of bacon. So I'm not really going to fight on this one because this just means that there's somebody else there to take my 14 portions of bacon, which have led me to looking like a full-size bagel with cream cheese spewing out of my mouth.
For me, this is also just in line with all of those. Like, there's this place in somewhere in New Jersey, my husband's family likes it, called Veggie Heaven, and it's all vegetable-based that's meant to have the texture of meat and taste like certain meat items. But if you're choosing to not, you don't need those flavors in your life.
That's why it's called Satan.
Yeah. Satan.
That's right.
By the way, you know, the only reason my theory of why pigs were prohibited is that when they were looking for converts for religions, whenever all religions started, they were like, to be part of our club, you can't eat pigs. And they're like, all right, that's cool, man. I don't have to see any pigs around here in the desert. They're like, and no shellfish either. Yeah. They're like, all right, I'm in. That's
great. Yeah, but there's a thing like rabbit, because I was asking, I have a friend that has a halal slaughterhouse, and I was looking for rabbit. It's like, listen, we cannot have rabbit unless, because rabbits, apparently they take their front paws and they bring the food to their mouth. And you're not supposed to do that if you want to be halal.
I do that all the time.
I guess it's special. Yeah. It's the same thing for kosher, but a rabbit that graze just like a goat would, it's totally fine. So he got me special rabbits.
The rabbit learns to pick up the food with his mouth or just his teeth,
exactly.
And doesn't use his paw. I don't know what you call them.
That's
paws?
What you were saying earlier. It's absurd. It's not the spirit of why these
I think they call them thumpers.
We call them wings.
Oh, wings.
They're
rabbit wings.
Yes. As you're eating them, call them wings.
And then the next thing... Imran, our friend who has the slaughterhouse, said was, and please don't, we'll never do this again because we can't stand the sound of they make when we slaughter them. It apparently is so heartbreaking, and to some of their grisly staff that do 85 goats for Kubani, they couldn't take it.
Oh, the goats make the sound.
No, they're used to that.
Rabbits. Have you ever slaughtered a rabbit?
I saw Roger and me by that.
So is a goat. The goats are pretty.
You know,
pretty
the traditional
terrible.
Way is you just lay like a broomstick over their back of their neck, right? And you step on it, and then you pull their back legs up, and just quick. But if you do it wrong, the sound is
terrible.
Do you know
rabbits are not part of the USDA? So we were inspected by our freezers were inspected by the city, and we had some rabbits there. And she's like, I don't care about the rabbits. So basically, the rabbits could have been done in my basement, and it would have been fine. It could have been a rat.
Really, you could put a lot of stuff in there, and she did.
I'm like, it's
right
not USDA.
You gave me a great idea though for a movie, Roger Rabbit and Me.
Roger Rabbit and Me. All right, well, here, let's go goat. We're talking goat.
All right.
Everybody hollering goat.
Why doesn't anyone eat goat in this country?
Because they're stupid.
No, they're not.
Greatest of all time.
So do you guys, it is Goat-tober. It is the month of October.
Saturday was when Cabrito closed.
Is it Goat-tober in Canada, too?
No. Those, it is Goat-tober around the world, Mike.
They have two goats a week at M. Wells Steakhouse, so everyone should go. And he's a king of breaking down animals. People from other restaurants send their sous chefs to learn the art.
I know, that's fantastic.
And then I don't show up.
Do you break them down verbally, or do you? This is a literal thing? Like, no, you're like, I'm going to humiliate you in front of all your friends.
He uses irony.
It's like ass training for goats.
Yeah, he's like, who do you think you are? I think goats evolved themselves to be unpleasant on the farm. Like, they eat paper, they break out at things. So farmers didn't want to have them, and then they get to stay alive more and live in the woods.
What about the goats in pajamas on trampolines?
Yeah, they do. They're very smart, goats are. And also in the Bible, they were always portrayed as the devil. The devil was always a goat. Yeah,
because they have horns. Right. Yeah. Does that have something to do with it?
Yeah. And also, you know, they look a little.
I mean, also remember Billy Goat's Gruff?
Yeah. No?
I know
There's
Gruff
so
the
many
dog.
Rock
McGruff.
And roll bands or modern ones with the word, with the name goats. The goat, like the goats.
For instance.
and the lasting image which pops up for all of us is the goats that walk up the sides of the mountains.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
that,
right.
Mad respect for that, but I guess we
I can't do that.
We eat more
goat's head soup.
Goathead Zoob.
What about the goats in, what was the Dan Aykroyd movie where they're policemen? Oh, wait, Lord.
You know what the weird thing is? You said Dan Aykroyd, and the Canadians didn't say, hey, he's Canadian. Because Canadians usually do that. When you mention someone's Canadian, they always want to point it out. And then they want to tell you, like, 10 other people are Canadian. You know who else is Canadian? Martin Short. You know.
And the water got invented in Canada, I believe.
Yeah. Oh, really? Water then? So why do chefs, why do no one eat goat in America?
It's a good question. I don't know. We don't eat goat in Canada as well.
France?
Barely, a little bit. I mean, it's mostly
because of the meat?
The Maghrebin countries and stuff. I don't know. See,
is it a
maybe
lesser
the meat?
Meat?
People think it's like woolly or something. I really enjoy goat. It's not. I don't know. It tastes like something. People like when things.
Well, they make incredible cheese. They make cashmere.
They make
I went
cheese,
to this really
but even
cool
though,
store
like, you
yesterday.
Know, goat cheese, it's not for everyone. People like, you know.
Do you have to do tasty. More as a chef to make goat taste good than you do cow? Or is goat just also delicious?
Not to my liking, but I think to serve to people you have, you know, like, you have to spice it up.
And he's committed. I mean, we were in the museum, this like sort of semi-wacky museum, so I guess it worked, and within a month we were doing what could have and should have been a little tiny cafe. We were breaking down goats and on the blackboard writing out the, you know, drawing out the animal, and the pieces would go as they flew out, and it made no sense at the museum at the time, but it did for us.
No, just so listeners know, you guys are located in PS1, MoMA PS1 in Long Island City, so just so everyone knows what museum we're talking about.
Uh-huh. There was a goat sandwich on the Roberta's menu a while back, right?
We love goat. We also have goat quite often in many ways.
I'll tell you what, my badass goat chili, I've been told it's the best chili many people have ever tasted. I'd love you guys.
Badass.
Badass goat chili. You guys are all invited over my house to have goat and moonshine.
But it's also, you know, all the what's inside, right? Like the stomachs are beautiful. Everything is more delicate. The brain, I mean, that's the best brain you can have. It's goat.
Goats are very intelligent animals. Anne always wanted a goat. Yeah, goat testicles.
Do you know that the slaughter and the bull testicles?
The slaughterhouse calls the testicles fries. I don't know why, but that's when the box comes in late.
Turkey
fries.
Yeah, there's a few things like that. Yeah.
Well, anyway, yeah, goat is it's an interesting thing. We're only able to sell it once a month. All right, well, we have one. We're
once
running out
year,
of time.
Once a year. Goattober is live. But
can,
I want to come
the
in.
Can you save the testicles for me? This
sure.
Time?
Yeah. We'll ask.
I mean, let's have to send go party
right
now.
They're all slaughtered already.
No,
for
they're
the
not.
Month, right?
We're defrosting them now.
I hope that's a weekly hot take. Can you save the testicles for me?
Everyone wants a testicle.
That should be on the sampler. We should be able to use that at least once a week.
Look at this. TJ Steele, Claro Restaurant, great restaurant. Got balls? I would like some excess if you can send me some more.
No, he doesn't. Nope, sorry.
I see there's a bumper sticker, got balls.
He must be listening live. He heard that M. Walls was looking for the testicles.
Yeah, people want them. All right, well, this is a really important topic that I'm fired up about. Before we go to the interview, tell us about James Beard's new rules.
All right, and then
rules.
Before we go to the break, Mike has some clip from Mississippi.
Oh, yeah, you
want to
play that now?
Sure, sure. You know, Everybody Hollering Goats, record by Othar Turner. What you're going to hear is Othar Turner was the last great fife player, and it's been this fife and drums, just kind of this pre-blues music. He'd make fifes out of canes, you know, like reeds, like sugar canes, like reeds. And what you're hearing is like music from the slave era, like pre-blues music. And he had this picnic that he ran down in northern Mississippi hill country, where he'd have his fife and drum band play, and he slaughtered two goats every year over Labor Day. And they did this party for like 50-something years running until he died about 10 years ago. And I got to go, and they slaughtered two goats, and they stew them, and they serve it on white bread.
This happens
goats
annually?
Goats on white bread. He was What's doing it. I think sauce? One of his daughters picked it up. It was just like this, like kind of very peppery goat stew, and they eat bones in it, and he served it on white bread. And guys would come around, and for 50 cents, they'd give you some corn liquor, moonshine.
And you went?
You know, yeah.
How did you invite it?
It was one of the coolest things I ever did. I knew a guy, you know?
You knew a guy?
I knew a guy, and it's incredible. So I thought in honor of Goattober, we'd play a little... right from his record called Everybody Hollerin' Goat, which is really more of a field recording than a proper LP. But
all right, Amanda,
yeah,
let's do this.
Turner.
See?
Fantastic. Let's go to break, and we will be back with the interview portion
of the main course OG.
Hearst Ranch is a proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. The Hearst family has been raising cattle on the rich, sustainable native grasslands of California's Central Coast for over 150 years. Piedra Blanca Rancho in San Simeon is the original Hearst Ranch, founded by George Hearst in 1865. George's son was the famous publisher William Randolph Hearst. In addition to being known for building the iconic Hearst Castle, William was, like his father before him, an avid rancher. In his words, "I would rather spend a month at the ranch than any place in the world." Thanks to one of the largest land conservation easements in California history, a joint effort with the California Rangeland Trust, the American Land Conservancy, and the state of California, the working landscape at Hearst Ranch will be preserved forever. Learn more about Hearst Ranch at HearstRanch.com.
All right, and we're back with the main course OG. We are airing live on Heritage Radio Network from Roberta's here in Bushwick, Brooklyn. So if you've been listening, you know that we have in studio Sarah Obritis and Oog. I said that wrong for sure. Oog Dufour. Chef and owners of Emwell Steakhouse and Emwell's Dinette in Long Island City at PS1. Thanks for being with us, guys.
Yeah, my pleasure. Our pleasure.
So we were talking a little bit before about the museum. What is it like operating a restaurant in a museum? Is it a challenge, and does it challenge you to prepare food differently?
Oh, I mean, we've been preparing, we've been changing so many times there. First, the physical location of the place is kind of awkward because we're tucked in the middle of it. So it's like...
It's a 100-year-old public school. It takes up a one city block, square block, and with a humongous courtyard where surrounded by 12-foot, maybe 20-foot concrete walls. I mean, there's not even... You'd never know anything with some... like us, was happening inside.
Yeah, so we've been, it's like a carrefour of all sorts of things. We've been serving all sorts of purpose. And like, we kind of were treated like artists in residence by the curator, which was a little silly. But it kind of slowly became just that. So we adapt with like the different exhibits. And like, there's also, we cater to all sorts of needs, from coffee to like people so they can change for like a show that's outside in a dome. And like,
so you'll do a thing based off the art, then you'll be like, well, let's make a...
I mean, you know, because it forces us to adapt to...
Just accommodate to the needs of every...
The demographic is changing according to the shows.
I see, right.
All sorts of things. I mean, the time of the year also brings different kind of tourists with different needs, different sensibilities. And like... also, the popularity of the shows. Sometimes it's dead as fuck, and then we have to...
still be there. Is there anything that's never changed on the menu that's always been a constant, like the PS1 Club or something?
I'm trying to think. I mean, I would think the spaghetti sandwich is something that's recurrent.
The poutine?
Poutine, no. I've never done poutine there.
No fryer.
I've been resisting poutine for so long, but...
But it's nice because we carry a tight little a menu. You know, before we opened up the steakhouse, our wine list at the dinette, just to get our own yayas out, it was thick. We had a lot of fun drinking, hanging out, having a lot of options. And then over the years, it's sort of all that inventory and sort of also because people don't drink during the day like we do. We thought they did. Maybe they do. They do not in Queens.
The people that have nothing else to do but to go to a museum in the weekend.
Yeah, I'll tell you, two people who probably drink in the day like you is Mike and I. We're always saying the one thing that this show misses is a drink. And usually at 9 o'clock, we're totally ready to go, and nobody else is.
And jarts. It's coming.
Yeah.
Wait, I never knew there was a drug compartment on the wall.
Yeah.
Wow.
Patrick and I really,
when we built this thing, that was crucial right there. Yeah, that was absolutely. The secret.
But then we'll do secret. The warm-ups, you know, those DJ dance parties, 500 people, and wow. you'll make like $45,000 in an hour by getting people blottoed. That's not the We're way we like to roll, but you're there and you roll with the punches.
What about a steakhouse? That also seems like a challenge in this era. Like, I just heard like a steakhouse is closing and it's...
Steakhouse with a fish tank.
Yeah, it's not a traditional steakhouse where you have like 30 cuts of beef.
And my ideas of what things should be. It is tricky, but it was always, I feel like, the idea of like going to a steakhouse was always a celebration, and it should be like this. It might not be the best thing for business, but
in the end, we're a bar restaurant, and
I don't think we should eat a steak every day. And I think we should come to celebrate. People celebrate mostly the weekends. Mm-hmm.
But there are people celebrating things every day of the week. Oh, yeah, so when they want to celebrate, they should go
National Coffee Day, National Pasta Day.
But I think it should be like this.
A thing with Japanese food is the restaurants that serve Japanese food are almost always very boring. And even though they stop buying from us, so I secretly hate them a little bit, I love Morimoto. Because it's fun and everything's a spectacle and the apps are always served for the whole table. You don't just get your little app by yourself. It's fun. Yeah.
Well, one of your questions...
Restaurants should be fun.
We probably won't get to because we all talk so much, is, your favorite place to eat alone. So you'll have, someone older than Mike there in their prom dresses with their parents.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, I'm a little...
And it's a big...
are there people there older than Mike? So Noah and Methuselah come to your place?
Bar, how do they get out? So the person that carries them in doesn't sit with them? He's not that old.
It's a caretaker.
The challenge also, it's like people they go out, right? And they want the whole menu. So they want like tons of little small things. You know, we've done that at the diner and stuff. But I came to a point where I like to know what I want to eat and sit by myself and eat my old dish. That's like that would satisfy
So the bar
me.
Has all the loners, it's and then you have the big anniversary parties.
Yes, you think by yourself, you're drinking, room. And then you're like removed from your house and your family, and you can actually get perspective on things.
I love solo eating. Like I'm a huge solo eater, especially on Universal Earth Day. That's a big day for me. I usually watch a movie by myself and eat. AKA Universal Earth Day, also known as Father's Day.
Now that is going against the trend, right? Because I mean, many people want, like you say, the appetizers and the seconds. Like I went to Franchette, which I know are friends of your guys, Riyadh and stuff. That is a fun restaurant. Yes. But we never order the seconds. We always order the amuse-bouche and then the appetizers, but we should.
I do have to say those are the best. I mean, everything is great there, but those are the things that are the most fantastic, to be honest with you.
Yeah,
the soft scramble with escargot, like all of those things in the beginning, you're just like, by the time you're done, you're like, really? I'm gonna have a steak?
But I miss the going out with my mom and having a 22-ounce steak. I love that. And people
we probably don't
do that
have it on the night you come. So we frustrate a lot.
Yeah. I know.
Yeah.
We frustrate a lot of steak lovers. They're like, just drop the name steakhouse. We're like keeping it because people who are vegetarian got their partners. They can't bring them, so they think. And those who come in and want the bone in, I don't know, the tomahawk, and we don't have it that night, or we have like a tuna collar steak or something, and 15 other things as entrees and steak-ish type options, we mess with them a little bit, and we like it. And
I think that's okay. That's fun. That also keeps people coming back. But I know some people want the tried and true, where they know exactly what they're going to get. But it seems like maybe that's also how you roll with the punches at the museum.
Keeps people from... talking about us, I guess. Yeah. That's kind of what I want. Just come and eat. Have fun. I mean, just French onion soup, like, you know, like we're doing it with oxtail in it. You know, it's a dish on itself. You have that alone, the glass of wine. You read it a little bit. You're happy.
But also, there's something to be said about doing what you do and being yourself. And I think a lot of restaurateurs kind of get away from that and they start to see like, oh, these things work for me. I'm just going to keep doing these things that work for me, that make money for me. But there's something to be said about just staying true to what it is you do and just keep doing it, which
is
admirable.
And playing the long game. I think like the next trend is going to be into nostalgia of things, you know, that's going to come to that.
Well, I think 40% of the restaurants in New York City need to close, like 30-40%, and the tried and true ones, the long game people, stay, you know, because it is interesting. Would you say your cuisine is Canadian or French, or it's just the things you've seen from traveling around the world?
I mean, there's all sorts of things. I'm not trying to...
It's Queens Quebecois.
Yeah. Quebeco American?
Yeah. We call the diner a Quebeco American.
The QQ.
Quebeco American.
It's hard to define. Like, I mean, like, I'm trying to... you know, we're inspired by people we work with and, like, the surroundings and stuff. Mm-hmm. I'm not trying to be Canadian. And, right. like, a lot of... I had a show in Canada back in the days, and people... brings a lot of people from Canada, and like, a lot of people ask me, like, what's Canadian about this? It's like, it's probably just me. Yeah, but that's the thing.
Just you.
Well, your steak's a little nicer and funnier than other steaks.
And then when you do when there's a new exhibit, for example, at the museum, like, does the curator come in, and are there dishes that are named?
Used to be more like this. We used to work more in partnership. I mean, it's not always happening this way, but, like, we do all the openings and stuff. We used to, sometimes we sit with the artist. It's funny, I had one at some point that told me that, like, he cornered me after we had a meeting about what we should serve, and he warned me that he didn't want me to eclipse his heart.
But I like this idea of, like, weird conceptual, you know, the nexus where art and food meets. You know, have you ever seen the Dali cookbook, you know, with, like, those towers of, like, lobsters and all this weird stuff they're cooking, or the futurist cookbook, you know, like chicken stuffed with ball bearings, you know, food for the industrial age. But I love, like, this high art concept food, you know, in context, obviously. Yeah. I wouldn't want to eat ball bearing stuffing every day. Just on National Ball Bearing Day.
Yeah, making menu for people and, like, you know, getting a little bit what they want, but not really doing it.
we have a real hero opening up a show, Bruce Nauman, living artist, huge work from the 50s, 60s. And anyway, it's going to take over the whole building. And he comes quite often, and he's a big meat eater. And no, we don't have gas there, so we don't have a grill, that sort of thing. But we stuff him up, and he always brings a maker's mark.
His
own maker's mark. We don't carry that. But it's a lot of fun because he just simply, like, just enjoys it for what it is. It has nothing to do with the fact that, like, we're next to his big neon hello, blinking hello sign.
Well, I have my final question, I guess, for both of you, but especially Sarah, because you're from Long Island City. Can you give us the definitive, every time we list our restaurants, everyone, like Manhattan, we have like 100 restaurants, Brooklyn, we have like 40 restaurants, then there's Queens and Wells, and that's it. And I've seen that on other sites, because you are the only restaurant in Queens.
I would love to come back on board just to cold call Queens restaurants, see how I do.
What is Queens? I mean, why are there so few restaurants that people talk about? Long Island City, what's happening there? You born and raised on that little part of the gateway of Queens.
I was born and raised further out on the 7 train, really very different from the Long Island City area, which is... just as basically a new skyline right now. And, you know, there's a lot of homegrown deliciousness. And also, you know, Italian restaurants, tons of pizzerias, but a couple done doing it well. And then you have your chains that are New York favorites, like Cheyenne Foods and Toby's Coffee Shop. People love going to there. And then just like no, like ho-hum, everything else is just...
But why not restaurants?
Not
why aren't there 30 restaurants?
But then all the Asian restaurants.
There's a great pocket of Sichuan restaurants.
Chef, yeah. Like, you know,
it's so interesting. Now, one, you are it. I mean, I want to say, literally, that is so interesting to me that Brooklyn... is one of the most interesting cities to eat in the world, and Queens has one named chef. It's just such
yeah, but why does you need a name chef to make it interesting? Because there's so many great, like Sichuan and Asian restaurants in Queens. There's so much diversity and ethnic restaurants that you can't stuff. If you go out there, there's stuff on those Chinese restaurants you cannot find in Manhattan. It's just absolutely fantastic.
If you ask me to guess, there's a lot of
great ethnic restaurants in Astoria as well.
30 years ago, how many great restaurants, known restaurants, international places are there in Queens? I would have guessed 30. 50, and instead there might just be a couple, and
you're
then there are tons of
ethnic.
You're
filtering through the purchases of better meats,
yeah.
right?
Yes, I mean, that too.
As Mike says, I mean, there are
it's well
owner,
worth
owner
taking
chefs
a food adventure in Queens
that don't roll off your tongue, right? Because you just don't know their families.
And people
are,
write about them. It's just interesting that not more people have gravitated, or that you don't have four restaurants like yours.
Well, as they
you
say,
know.
You know, Brooklyn has the brownstones, and we have the aluminum siding, so maybe that's
Archie
you
Bunker.
Know part of. We lack the fanfare naturally, and we focus on other things like.
Is it the
TV.
Bridges? Is it because it's not as accessible, or the 7 train? I wonder.
The 7 train is great. Look,
no, it's the worst train.
We're
there
about
is.
To get cut off here on the L. So was she? They.
Yeah,
they're
the 7
in, they're
start
in the
running.
New heart.
Yeah.
yeah.
So
I mean, I know I'm setting
see?
The bar pretty low, but there you have it.
New menu. We're going to come in for Go-tober. So I don't know. Do we reserve here on the radio, or we're going
to
make a reservation right now?
With Ugin Sarah.
Oh,
you
do?
Let's go to
Emeralds.
What
about
and
all
goat.
These ethnic ones? Why do you go to a big name restaurant when there are all these
Emeralds?
Great Sichuan places?
Because I'm keeping my eyes open, daddy-o.
We got to get you to Emeralds.
Yeah, yeah. A steakhouse.
Yeah,
I've been to the PS1
I
and
goat.
It was at your old diner.
Listen to Othar Turner and eat some goat with y'all.
So,
or some great Canadian rock.
Good for business.
Anything menu-wise we want to know about at the steakhouse? I mean, just something that every New Yorker absolutely needs to come and taste for the kind of fall menu? Or no, it's just always good. It's always changing.
I mean, we change a menu every week.
Okay.
I would say
like
only one third of the menu remain. Because, yeah, of course, we have a partnership with farmers and stuff.
Yes.
We can, and like some people age meats for us. Like we're not going to turn on them like this.
Of course.
But everything else changes. So, and we try to be seasonal, trying to make a season of things.
Like Go-tober.
Like Go-tober, and that's a great thing.
Two goats a week. They're like one would never do. We need two.
And this is going to be a lot of fun. You know, we have a chalkboard with the drawing of a goat. We decline all parts. We have a certain amount. We cross them as we go. People
fun.
Are frustrated. They throw stuff at us.
They're like,
we
what?
Like them no matter what.
The and balls go first.
Yeah. The balls go first.
Balls first.
Well, Sarah, what was the name of your show when you had it here?
Eat to the beat.
Eat to the beat. It was good. So thanks for coming back. You guys should do a show again. Get all your crew here on a weekly show. That'd be awesome.
Dynamite. Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us. Mike?
I can't wait to holler goat.
Brandon,
I'm making
Emily,
goat chili.
Amanda, Oog.
I'm excited.
Sarah, thank
you. All right,
you.
Go-tober. Celebrate at M. Wells.
Stay tuned for Tech Bites, which airs in 9 minutes.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening. Smart and designed, black convertible top, and the gals don't mind.